You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for January 20th, 2017. It's not safe for work.
This is The Professional Left, live with Drift Glass and Blue Gal asking the musical question, what if there was an executive branch and nobody came? Hello, darling.
You going to do your little promo also?
I think we should. I think it's a podcast. We're going to do this podcast every goddamn week. And I think we have, you know, we've done this 370 times as of today. So this week's exciting episode is brought to you by MacGuffin's Muffins. MacGuffin's Muffins, building strong plot points 12 ways. That's the Adventures of the Cornfield Resistance, brought to you by MacGuffin's Muffins.
There you go.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, everybody. Is something going on today that we're supposed to know about? I don't know. Yeah.
You should all be aware, because I'm sure you all care deeply about this. We are squeezing in a podcast Friday morning before the events of the day unfold.
Yep.
So obviously we're going to miss some stories from the afternoon, whatever they may be, due to time constraints and drop-offs and meetings I have to go to and a number of other things.
And first up, I would like to thank everyone who contributed, who has contributed so far to the Professional Left Furnace Fund, which it turned out is now a thing. We did get the new furnace. The furnace is doing great. It's working well. And we had to figure out how to turn it off this morning so we could podcast. But it's much quieter than the old furnace.
Well, the kids are not quite used to stoking coal yet.
Yeah, we'll get
there. They're little people. The basement's fairly low ceiling. They'll get used to it. It's good for the character. No. Good back muscles, too.
At any rate, we don't expect contributions from the podcast are going to pay off the furnace, but you guys have definitely softened the financial blow for us, and for that we are tremendously grateful. Thank you so much. And we got lots of letters along with that, using analogies of you keep me warm, you keep me comfortable, you know, you help me through the cold nights of whatever. One listener wrote and said, like you guys, I am firmly middle-aged and sometimes feel I'm getting too old for this. But being on the other side of 50, as they say, I'm out of fucks to give.
Right.
And I am all with you on that. I am endeavoring to cultivate some peace in my soul to be effective in the times ahead.
Right.
Thanks again for all you do. As you know, I frequently listen to you during times of great stress.
Yeah.
I consider you good semi-imaginary friends and have appreciated your humor and good insight. Go Cornfield Resistance. And I wrote back to this person and said, we consider you real friends. You don't have to. We're not imaginary. We're real people and we love you. So those of you that write to us, and as I've said many times before, when we get envelopes in the mail or when we get emails, so often I'll say, oh, we heard from, you know, Bill today. We heard from Sam today. We heard from Bob today. We heard from Valerie today. We heard from Susan today, whatever. You know, and it's family.
It's a lot like,
go ahead.
It's like Romper Room. I see Joey and I see Susan. Have you been a doobie or a don't be today? And I strongly
recommend.
The fact
that I remember that, I mean, that is probably, that and Simba are probably my earliest memories. Simba the Lion.
Oh, Captain Kangaroo for you?
Captain Kangaroo and Mr. Green Jeans and Dancing Bear. That was, you know, Mr. Moose with the ping pong balls. That was core childhood, though. That's really a firm, solid memory. Excuse me. We have kitty cats. You're going to learn, Olive. Olive is now learning that older kitty
is not
to be tampered with.
Yeah.
Older kitty has a place.
That's right. And we're not going to mess with that.
Yeah, we don't mess with that. So.
Yeah, Cabin Kangaroo was definitely before Sunday morning, Saturday morning cartoon people started taking hallucinogens. And
yeah,
then after that was H.R. Puffin stuff when they started passing the good stuff around. And Banana Splits.
Banana Splits.
And
so forth. I can still sing the Banana Splits song. I bet a lot of people can.
You know what? We might exit our show with the Banana Splits song this
week. Why not? All right.
Anyway, but per our listener's letter,
yes,
we do not advocate cultivating a sense of calm and and centeredness for the purpose of gazing into your own navel.
No, it's not denialism or, check out for the next 4 years. Nobody's checking out here.
No. It is to be as focused and effective as possible.
Mm-hmm.
To not freak out at every little shadow, to pick the right fights, and to focus your attention on places where you can make an actual difference and move things forward. Because, boy, do we need you now.
And you and I really both kind of gritted our teeth through the last episode of Sherlock this week. We both thought it was pretty bad, frankly. But the part where...
A train wreck.
John... the part where John Watson... says soldiers.
Yeah, that I gotta say.
And everybody sort of, turn off all your fear and all your personal anxiety because we've got a mission. That's it. And you saw all of the actors knew exactly what to do in that situation. I'm gonna my posture is gonna change, my facial expression is gonna change, and I'm not an individual. I am now a part of a team that's going to win this battle. And that's...
We are soldiers, and all that other shit doesn't matter. One of the lines from that show that stood out was family. When his brother tried to get Watson out of the room, because this is family, and Holmes says, that's why he stays. There's a lot of people who have left our team. And I'm not going to dwell on them today because now's not a good day to do that. But people who still haunt my comment section just to be pissy, I put up a thanks Obama post and I get three comments about, what an asshole Barack Obama was. And you know what? They never made it to the page because I just delete those now. I don't need those people. I don't want those people. They're basically bug splats.
I want to ask you about that.
Sure.
Because Barack Obama's legacy, we're not going to dwell on it for an hour.
No.
Because we're very grateful for his presidency and focus on the good. However, you wrote up Ross Douthat this week.
I did.
And one of the things that he mentioned that stuck in my craw was that Barack Obama is a cult.
Yes.
Which anyone who is... of the party of Donald Trump really shouldn't let those words in his whore mouth, in my personal opinion. But the more I thought about it, and last night, as everyone on Twitter was saying, thanks, Obama. And they were chanting outside the White House, thanks, Obama. And New York City was chanting, thanks, Obama. And it occurred to me, and I was really praying about this, which is it a cult? And I think we have to at least ask that question of ourselves. And the way I look at it when I think about this is I am more than willing to talk with anyone about Barack Obama's failures and his humanness and what about him didn't work. If we're talking about it as historians, and this is the first draft of history is what you talk about. This is not how he'll be remembered long term necessarily. On the other hand, he is now sandwiched between two presidents who are by comparison really not good presidents. So
I call them the petite mal and grand mal presidencies.
So that as far as the immediacy of it matters, but I am convinced that Barack Obama held the presidency in esteem above his own ego.
Right.
To the point that he held the office.
Right.
And so when I hear Ross Douthat or you know, Fox News say, you got to respect the office and just suck it up and go to the inauguration, because the office, it's not about a man. It's about the office of the presidency that you have to respect. Again, the utter total hypocrisy of that.
Right. And I think that is, I am perfectly willing to have intelligent grown-up discussions with members of my family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you show up on a sad day at a funeral and your first fucking impulse is to insult the guy in the coffin. You know, and look around and say, yeah, he was an asshole. He owed me money. He was a dick. Yeah. If that's your first impulse, then you know what? You're not here for any reason other than to vent your fucking spleen.
Well, but then the other side of that, and I'm really playing devil's advocate here.
Sure.
Okay. Is that, and again, this is devil's advocate. The devil's advocate position would be, by not going to the inauguration today, or by not watching the inauguration and not participating in the peaceful transfer of power, you are the nasty ex-husband at a wedding who walks in and shits on everything when we're trying to celebrate a new beginning for America.
Go ahead, celebrate. Have a great time. Have a wonderful time. I remember that during the peaceful transition of power in 2008, leaders of the Republican Party met at a steakhouse.
That's right. That's right.
And they cooked up a plan to destroy the Obama presidency.
Yeah.
The day he was inaugurated was the day they unveiled their plan to cripple and destroy the Obama presidency by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. And that was during a time of economic freefall, stuck in the middle of two wars, any number of disasters bearing down on us from all sides. And their highest priority was to cripple this guy right out of the box by whatever means they could lay their hands on. Now, that being said, that's the baseline.
Yeah.
Those are your rules.
Well,
that's your standard. All I'm doing to the Republicans out there is holding them to their own standards.
Yep.
Your standard
is Martin Luther King of you, by the way.
All I'm saying is, and this is why the most important thing liberals can do while we are in the wilderness is to do what we've always done. The most dangerous and important tool in your inventory is your memory. Because I swear to Almighty God, 18 months from now, half the Trump voters you know will swear on the lives of their children they hated Donald Trump and never voted for him.
Right.
Or they'll blame the cucks and the rhinos in Congress.
Right.
And the secret liberal media something something for the fact that America's not great anymore or great again or great yet or whatever the fuck they're going to complain about. Those people, all of them, if you voted for Donald Trump, you're not on my team. And if your first impulse on this day is to show up on my blog and piss all over my comment section about what an asshole Barack Obama
was. That's what you've got to do with your time today.
That's your priority. And you know what? God, I'm glad I live in a country where you get to have that as your priority. But you're basically my enemy. I don't give a shit how much I hurt you. I don't give a shit about your feelings or you've just told me everything I need to know about you.
Yeah.
You are the one who needs to be defeated. You are the one who needs to be wiped out in terms of your electoral voice.
We're going to switch gears because you're getting mad.
No, I'm just saying, all I'm doing is doing what every good liberal should do, which is hold them to their own standards.
Right.
After the Clinton administration, the standard was we must investigate anything any president does, no matter how trivial it is.
In time of war, it's the most important thing to do, right?
Time of war, time of peace, whatever. It's in Lincoln bedroom, Christmas card list, you know, travel gate, whatever he – even if there's a whiff of scandal, even if that whiff comes from a crackpot right-wing magazine that you know is full of shit, we have to hold investigations. That went out the window the day that – George Bush took office. And then the new standard was, fuck deficits. Who gives a shit? He's the president. He can do whatever he wants, you know, and you're just a traitor if you don't follow in line. Oh, okay. That's the new standard.
But Driftglass, I'm a little bit afraid because that means under that standard, if we're gonna have the same standards under a Democratic president that the Republicans have under Trump, that means you and I are gonna be in the White House press pool.
We are. let me just wind that out. Under Bush, the new standard was shut up and toe the line.
Right.
Under Obama, the new standard was, oh, fuck towing the line. You must destroy him at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
So it is vitally important even if we have no position of power other than a blog and a podcast and occasionally a voice on in the air, to remind people mm-hmm. that the Republican Party are full of traitors and liars and con men and morons. And every time the administration changes, they change the rule book 180 degrees.
Yep.
Yep. I mean, and this gets us to the confirmation hearings.
Oh, well, that's what I was going to point out is, you know, we now get to have a secretary. Now I'm going to say something nice about two of Donald Trump's appointees. Mm-hmm. And I apologize to our listeners for doing that. But I do think we have to give credit where credit is due. And this is, again, why we're not a cult. OK, we're able to actually say, no, someone did something right. I do not think that Rex Tillerson should be the Secretary of State.
No,
I do not think. I mean, ExxonMobil already controls enough of our foreign policy in a very bad way that this blatant putting an ExxonMobil chief and friend of Vladimir Putin in charge of our foreign policy is a very bad idea.
Who has already sunk billions of dollars into Russia. Yes. And has not profited thereby because we have sanctions against Russia.
Right. So let me say that. Uh-huh. That said, the ethics person who was, you know, all at once subpoenaed by Jason Chaffetz, and then the guy said, look, let me just come meet you in your office. And Jason Chaffetz said, no, I can't do that. Like, you know, he's such an asshole. Anyway.
Yes, he is.
The ethics chief pointed out to the press and spoke directly in his speech to Donald Trump to say it is not too late. It is not too late for you to, Mr. President-elect, to abide by ethics rules. I can help you do this.
Right.
You're not going to, you know, we have lots of experience with, you know, it's not a fire. Trump apparently thinks it's a fire sale of your assets. It's not. We show you how to hire a trustee. We'll show you how these things are put behind a wall so that it is a true blind trust. Uh-huh. And I am willing, more than willing, to help you do it in a way that is legal and ethical and protects your interests. Because I understand we have to protect your interests as well.
Got it.
And he held up as an example Rex Tillerson.
Sure.
Who did everything that the ethics office asked him to do.
Uh-huh.
He divested from his stocks. He hired a trustee. He put everything behind a wall so that he does not know where how his investments are being handled. Uh-huh. The trustee is independent. The trustee is in contact with the ethics office so that he is accountable to the ethics office for the investments he makes.
Right.
And I mean, down the line. Now, a lot of that is because ExxonMobil knows plenty of attorneys who've had to do this kind of thing before, right? I mean, this is how power happens. It's because you know what you're supposed to do when you do it.
And it's a short-term divestment for a long-term profit.
For a very long-term profit. I'm trading and sacrificing income. There's no doubt about it that, quote, Rex Tillerson on paper is taking a hit.
Right.
However,
the minute he gets his sanctions lifted and he leaves office, he'll go right back to Exxon.
There's a seat warm for him and he's good to go.
There'll be a signing bonus that'll be mysteriously $1 more than every dollar he gave up.
Right. Or, you know, I mean, and at this point in his career, he can be a dollar a year man and live off his, you know, his friendships, and he's helped everybody. He's helped the shareholders. He's helped everybody. So, not making excuses for, I think everybody knows I'm not making excuses for Rex Tillerson.
Oh, he'd be a
However,
disaster.
Professionally, he'd be a disaster. He did what he was supposed to do.
Right. So it is possible to do.
It is possible to do it. And Donald Trump, it is possible for you to do this. But apparently, the next Democratic president doesn't have to show us his tax returns.
Right.
Doesn't have to show us anything about his. He can have all the businesses he wants.
The next Democratic president could smoke weed on the White House lawn with his hooker friends, and get blowjobs from lobbyists on C-SPAN, and it's perfectly fucking okay because that's the new standard.
That's the new standard.
Except, of course, it's not.
No.
Because the minute a Democrat becomes the president-elect again in 4 years, everyone who is now bending over backwards to give the bastard president everything he wants, Reince Priebus going on Meet the Press just lying constantly, just lying and lying and lying and lying and lying. Jason Chaffetz suddenly has his come to Mormon Jesus moment, and says on whatever it was, ABC This Week, that he doesn't do fishing expeditions.
Yeah. And he didn't just dissolve.
And said the same thing three times.
Humanly dissolve on camera.
And used the same phrase three times.
The acid of his lies and hypocrisy should have dissolved his body at that point.
Well, that's how you know the Mormon God ain't the real God. Because he wasn't struck down by lightning on the spot. But I got it. Or someone told him, you know, the secret to getting into the higher level, the executive suite of Mormon heaven, is you say fishing expedition three times on TV. Really? Oh, yeah, it's totally true.
It works.
But Jason Chaffetz looked straight in the camera and said, I don't do that sort of thing. I'm not going to do investigation. And it's not as if he's just from the same party as the rest of these con men and traitors. Yeah, right. It's the same fucking guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it left a problem for, you know, I guess George Stephanopoulos,
who
was like, and of course, people in the media hide behind the locution. Well, some Democrats would disagree with your characterization of that, as opposed to saying you're a fucker, you're lying, get out.
I think Samantha Bee called George Stephanopoulos the human pocket square. He's not.
They're all useless.
He's not able to say.
Not quite true. Jake Tapper.
Jake Tapper has been very useful this week in remembering stuff.
Exactly. Right? That's the thing we have to do. Honestly, remember. And this is why, if you are on my team, in my family, that means you bargain and debate in good faith. When you argue with a Greenwaldian, some WikiLeaks douchebag, or a conservative, they have no intention of ever changing their mind about anything. Mm-hmm. All they're doing is sniffing around, poking you like a shark, looking for the weak spot to tear your throat out.
Yeah.
They don't care, and they will lie and lie and lie and lie and then change the subject and lie some more. I get it, but I'm not interested in playing that game with them anymore. They're useless to me. They're not going to advance my cause. They're not interested in anything I'm interested in. They're perfectly okay with defunding National Endowment for the Arts, defunding Planned Parenthood,
I think that announcement, there's two things I want to say. One is by Jake Tapper, and one is about that announcement of the draconian cuts.
The confirmation stuff first.
Okay. Let's do the confirmation stuff. Then we're going to do Jake Tapper. Then we're going to do... Sorry, guys.
Yeah,
we have notes today.
We do. And I'm keenly aware of the clock. And
Jake Tapper. And then what did I just say we're going to do after that?
Samantha Bee.
No.
The long list of things that we're going to defund. The Heritage Foundation.
Oh, yeah, the defunding. Okay. So you go ahead and talk about the confirmation hearings.
Well, two things about the confirmation hearings. First is the essential ludicrousness of everything involved with this.
Right.
The whole process is so horribly bollocksed, and Republicans are so nakedly okay with it.
Well, and that was the other nice thing I wanted to say about one of his nominees, which is it is sad that Rick Perry is the nicest and perhaps the most
affable,
humble and professional person. He's also the one, and Nikki Haley as well. The people like Mike Pence as well, who have been politicians, who have been elected politicians, have no problem with the ethics rules because they've already had to do this for their whole careers. So their tax returns are public. Everything's already above board. And that's because that's their career disclosure is what they've had to do, right?
Right.
So no complaints in terms of divulging stuff. Forgetting a $100 million thing because the paperwork was complicated,
ethics paperwork was complicated. I couldn't finish it on time.
I couldn't put $100 million. That's so Steve Martin. Yeah. I forgot I had that $100 million.
Yeah, you didn't. I thought you said schmillion. I thought you said scallions. I don't have scallions. I'm allergic.
Okay,
but it was that
we're laughing, so we don't cry.
Well, and here's the Jake Tapper connective tissue.
Yeah,
Jake Tapper remembered that. Look, 8 years ago, Tom Daschle was his nomination was suspended because he didn't pay taxes on some free rides he took when he was blah 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 blah.
Yeah,
this came up in committee. He said, "Here are the two different things. Number one, Nobody called it fake news.
No, no.
Nobody said, "Oh, you're making this crap up." Secondly, nobody said we were smearing him. No. Nobody said this is a deliberate political attack. It was an actual thing that really happened in the world that we reported on. Mm-hmm. Jake Tapper did say,
and it derailed his nomination because of one piddly tax thing.
And that was the norm.
Yeah.
That was the norm. Now we have a banker who can't handle paperwork, an HHS nominee who traded stocks in health-related companies when he was regulating them.
And the thing about that, then the CNN smear, you know, and we want you to publish a retraction. Uh-huh. Two things happened with that yesterday, one of which you might have missed. Number one, they said, you have to publish a retraction. He said, well, we have the timeline here, here, and here of how you're, you know, how Tom Price did this.
Yeah.
Right? Well, no, you need to publish a retraction. And by the way, you forgot two things in your timeline, which proved that the story was correct.
Right.
Then later on, I don't think you caught this because I think you had either gone to bed or were working on something else. With
I was
kids.
Curled up under the kitchen table crying.
So. Oh, no. Yeah. I think you were with the kids. The law firm that sent the letter to CNN asking for the retraction, the law firm that Spicer and these guys used to threaten and intimidate media.
Dewey, Cheatham & Howe, right?
Dewey, Cheatham & Howe had to withdraw their letter because they are also a law firm for CNN. So, yeah. Conflict of interest on your conflict of interest. It's a complication on my complication.
We have used this analogy before, but it really is like Martin Luther going to Rome.
Yes. And one more thing about Jake Tapper that I really appreciated was when he talked about Tom Daschle.
Yes.
He started by talking about it from a personal perspective.
Yes.
Of, I remember covering this story. I was in the White House covering this story, and I got a tip that there was a problem in the committee about Tom Daschle.
Right.
When you talk about it as a reporter, not only from memory, but from your own personal experience as a reporter, it's far less likely to get lost in the wash of everything.
Exactly.
Because you're actually part of the narrative. And And that's a brave thing to do. I don't think people realize that that's really a brave thing to do in journalism, to say, no, I was covering that story. And when you say those words, it's like, okay, we can't refute his memory. You say, well, you know, Republicans would disagree with you on your interpretation of events there because, no, I was there. I was there. This is what happened. So that was the point I wanted to make about Jake Tapper.
Yeah, right. And the point I was going to make about Martin Luther is, When he goes to Rome to, you know, be with his people, to hang out with it.
Yeah.
And he discovers, oh, my God, the whole place is corrupt.
Yep.
The whole place is sold out and corrupt and bankrupt. And everyone's in bed with everyone else. And everyone is living off the largesse of conning people and threatening people and telling them, I'll keep you out of hell if you cut me a check big enough to glorify my realm and build a giant cathedral. That is the media. That is the Republican Party. That is the incestuous, horrifying, utterly corrupt relationship between the media and the Republican Party. And there are a couple of liberal voices out there. But those liberal voices are gradually being leashes being put on them.
Yeah.
As Greta Van Susteren comes over to MSNBC and Megyn Kelly comes over to NBC, it's very clear the direction we are taking here. And it's very clear that there are lots of subjects that are of immediate and critical importance to you and I and voters and liberals out there that our liberal media is not allowed to talk about anymore because the dick pills and the reverse mortgages of their audience would be threatened by talking about the fact that the Republican Party is, from the base voter up to the White House, the entire party is a complete shit pile. And everyone associated with is a disaster.
And Fox News is the one thing that no one on any other media outlet is allowed to say, well, you know, the reason we have people that believe fake news is because they've been listening to it for 25 years.
Right.
They've been listening to Hannity for 25 years. That's why. Everybody in Washington, D.C. knows that. Everybody. But they will not say it on the air because two reasons. One is you don't want to offend any possible conservative who might have made it their way to your channel. To tell them that you're an idiot for believing anything Hannity says.
Uh-huh.
And number two, Fox pays really well.
Yeah, your
and
resume
your career
might
be hurt if you are an anti-Fox person.
You might end up there. I gotta roll through the rest of this list here. HUD, a HUD nominee who has no idea what housing urban development does, who said before he's not qualified to run a government department and who thinks pyramids were built by Joseph to store grain. Secretary of State, whose company's in bed with Putin up to his chin. A Secretary of Education nominee who hates public education, has never attended a public school, and who bribed her way to the nomination.
And who thinks doesn't know what special education law is.
No. Which... And whose brother-in-law is Eric Prince, who has his own army of mercenaries that destroyed Iraq, and also thinks that we should have guns in school because of bears. A Department of Energy nominee who has no idea until recently what the Department of Energy was supposed to do and had to bone up on it real quick because he wants that job. That's just the ridiculousness of the process. That's the standard issue. Holy shit, they're all nuts. They're all corrupt. They're all unqualified. They're all just pulled out of someone's ass. They're all payoffs to some political group or another, or some constituency or another, or lobbyist or another. That's the process. The fact that the process is screwed up has overshadowed the fact that there are 690 Senate jobs, not 4,000 that work in
Say
the West.
Say that again.
There are 690 Senate confirmable jobs that the bastard president has to fill. That is not does not include the thousands of jobs of people who work in the West Wing, or the millions of people who do work for the executive branch. Thousands and thousands of whom have to be vetted, have to be briefed, have to show up at their desk today, know what they're supposed to do, and get to work on the work of government. This president, this nominee, the bastard president, has only filled 28 positions.
Yeah.
There are apparently whole rooms full of incredibly critical positions in the executive branch that are just empty.
Well, and this is the invisible government shutdown.
Right.
Right? This is what, we just don't have an executive branch of government at this point.
Except, no. This is where I have to respectfully disagree.
Okay.
When we actually shut the government down, it was like Social Security checks will go out.
Oh, yeah.
Medicare checks will go out. And we'll close some parks and shit. But, we're not going to actually shut down the security apparatus of the United States. We're not actually going to stop monitoring hostile foreign governments for what they're doing. We're really going to stop doing that stuff now because there is nobody to take the baton because the bastard president didn't think through the need to actually fill these jobs. And so there are...
Let's face it, it was more important to go to thank you rallies to make my ego feel good, right?
And tweet about who's insulting me today. So you have hundreds, and I'm not talking about the millions of jobs or even the thousands of jobs. There are hundreds of jobs that have to be confirmed by the Senate, and they're not being confirmed because nobody has put them in the queue. Nobody's filled out the paperwork. Nobody has any names. And there are people whose whole life it has been to protect this country, to guard our nuclear weapons, to make sure that the national parks are running correctly, to make sure the national security is taken care of, to make sure lots and lots of people that there is – if there's a crisis in a country overseas, there is somebody whose job it is to know about that shit. All those people are out of work as of today, and there's nobody lined up to take their job. So they are literally leaving their files on the desk and walking out the door.
And you take this personally because this happened to you.
This happened to me exactly 8 years ago. Exactly 8 years ago this month, I knew I was being laid off from a position. I was not being laid off out of competence or any reason other than the fact that I was not politically connected enough to keep my job.
Yeah, and a lot of people were losing their jobs, and the politically connected could not lose their jobs.
Could not. So they needed to wipe out some people in management, and I was one of those people, to make room in the budget for people who were incompetent but politically connected, and that's what happened to me. So I had a lot of really critical projects that I was managing that had a lot of moving parts that were very tricky, that involved a lot of stakeholders that didn't like each other necessarily, but were coming together, working together because I managed the fuck out of those projects. And there were millions of taxpayer dollars at stake. And I walked around for a goddamn month asking anybody who would listen, including my boss and his boss and people on my staff and people in other departments, if they would please, 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 please take these projects over because they're really fucking important. And if they go down in flames, the department will look bad. We'll lose a couple of million dollars in taxpayers' money at a minimum. And the people we are supposed to help will get screwed. And the answer was, not my job, not my job. Nobody wanted to take over a complicated project. They were all overworked. They were all – but there was nobody above me who would take responsibility for this. So I left my
– and you and I talked about this at the time. And both of us knew that you were going to get a call to work for free to save their asses.
I did.
Once you'd been laid off, and sure enough, you did.
And
yeah.
And I started getting calls saying, how does this work? How does that work? Who are these people? What do I do? And I said, I left you a binder that's a foot thick that details everything you need to know. Oh, we can't find it.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Well, I left you my computer, which has all my notes on it. Well, we wiped that and research. Okay, then you're fucked, I guess. And I gave them some free advice. And then I said, look, hire me back as a consultant. I will save this project. You don't even have to give me my health care back.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that. We can't do that. So they and you know what? These vital, important, public, taxpayer-funded projects all burned
to
the ground.
Yeah.
And it was a complete fucking waste of time and money. It set them back I don't know how many years in public relations and in what we were trying to accomplish, and screwed the people we were trying to serve.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is exactly.
So he takes this very personally. That's what we're trying to say. So we're going to do a Bible bitch now.
Bible bitch.
That's not scriptural.
Uh-huh. And this relates back to Martin Luther and Rome and all that good stuff. I came across a book at my church's library by John Dominic Crossan, who is a Bible scholar emeritus, excuse me, at DePaul.
Wow. Uh-huh.
He is the author of Jesus, a Revolutionary Biography. So you know he's probably one of those lefty dangerous types.
Yeah.
This book is called How to Read the Bible and Still Be a Christian. An Exploration of Is God Violent from Genesis to Revelation. And I like books like this that sort of question why are some biblical texts the way it is? And why does it conflict with itself a lot of times? And not looking at it literally, but saying, you know, this has a historical context, and much of it speaks to us today, but some of it doesn't, and here's why. There is a chapter 14 in this book, called Paul and the Normalcy of Empire. And I saw that at a time I was feeling very low about Donald Trump, and I thought, oh, I'll bet this is going to be good. And sure enough, it was. The verse that Mr. Crossan is talking about is Philippians 2:12. And it is, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. And he talks about, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Well, okay, I guess you have to be afraid because you have to get it right or you'll go to hell, right? And then he said, no, that's not it. The whole verse is, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work with you. And he explores that a little more and says, well, then you don't need to be afraid and trembling because God is on your side, right?
No.
There's a conflict here. And then he says, and this is from his book I'm reading, then you see it. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling, not because God will punish you if you fail, but because Rome will punish you if you succeed.
Uh-huh. If you even try.
If you even try.
Uh-huh.
And so just to go back to the message and how the message reads this out, because I think all of us, whether we believe, and as you know, don't judge anyone. I don't judge anyone that's an atheist. I think you guys are right on target with where you need to be and don't have any arguments with you. But all of us need to feel that we have a mission. Whether those of us who feel that mission, that we need a spiritual dimension to that mission or a God dimension to that mission is individual choice. But I think we all need to feel like we have some sort of mission in the next 4 years to uphold the Constitution, to protect the rights of those less, those vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
And so this Philippians 2 spoke to me, and I think it might speak to others as well. And this is, again, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling is translated in the modern edition. Be energetic in your life of salvation, reverent and sensitive before God. That energy is God's energy. Do everything readily and cheerfully. No bickering, no second guessing allowed. Go out into the world uncorrupted, a breath of fresh air in this squalid and polluted society.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul wrote this letter to the Philippians at a time when he was absolutely convinced he was going to be executed.
Yep.
So just, you know, and he said, do everything cheerfully. You know, go out into the world, make a difference.
Yeah, but honey,
stand up for what's right.
He wasn't being attacked on Twitter. You know,
he wasn't being called a snowflake
on Twitter. So he doesn't really know what anxiety is all about.
He'd been put in chains in a fetid jail many times, but at least he wasn't called a snowflake on Twitter.
Yeah, but he wasn't muted. He wasn't muted, was he? Huh? Was he? Don't think so.
All right. That's very good.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Professional Left Podcast, professionalleft.blogspot.com. So we're back, and Driftglass had a meeting he had to go to this morning, and so we're back at around 3 in the afternoon Eastern time. I guess the parade is going to start soon.
Yeah, going to miss that.
We're going to miss that. We did not watch the speech. I did read the transcript for work, as, you know, youngest child always gets out the bottle of bleach whenever I have to watch Fox News for work. She says, here you go. Here's your favorite beverage.
Mommy, please. don't watch any more Fox News.
Right. And we want to thank the longtime friend podcast listener who sent all three children Thanks Obama t-shirt. Thanks Obama. Got worn to school today. So,
yes. And we'll be worn tomorrow.
Yeah, and we'll be worn tomorrow at the march. We're going to the march in Springfield, which appropriate because that's where Barack Obama announced his candidacy for president, in exactly the plaza that the march is going to be held tomorrow, and also introduced Joe Biden as his vice president at that spot. So we're going home, and we're going back to Obama's, you know, the origin of his campaign, and gonna wear our pussy hats, and you know, we're going to, I'm sorry, I'm going to turn this bell off here. And we're going to go and show the cornfield resistance flag, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Flag, by the way.
We need a cornfield with a big stalk of corn. Right. Right. People are working on that, by the way. Yeah.
Joe Biden hopped the Amtrak. So.
Oh, did he really?
Literally. Yes.
Yeah, what did you say? Good for
him. The Amtrak. Because, you know, that's Joe.
Because you can go back to Baltimore, right? Delaware. I'm sorry, Delaware, of course. And he's going to be doing stuff at the University of Delaware and also at Penn, I believe.
I understand they let them wear the engineer hat and blow the horn.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they let Joe Biden do whatever the hell he wants on that train. So, but I did read Trump's speech. And the people who write these things, the guy you like to listen to on the new podcast, what is his name again?
There's actually a few of them. Tommy Veter's one of them, and John
Favreau, right?
Favreau, and there's a couple of others who's, I'm really sorry about that, on Pod Save America, which
Pod Save America.
Keeping 1600. And we are, again, delighted that they're thinking of having us on as guests.
I haven't heard that.
Well, this is how you build buzz. I mean, build fizz. There's a rumor going around that they want us to appear on their
Well, that'd be awesome. You know, we're going to be so excited to join them in their podcast network and be on television with them. And
I don't know. I started that rumor. That's Hunter Thompson, by the way.
Oh, well, in any event, Jon Favreau did tweet today after Trump's speech that this is Steve Bannon. Wrote that, you know, clearly this is white nationalism, blood and soil, and it's a fairy tale. It has to be a dystopian nightmare that Donald Trump comes and fixes,
or that you'll be saved. There's a really sad but good article in Esquire, Charlie Pierce today.
Mm-hmm.
Something entitled, I just really glanced over it. We were kind of a hurry today, but it was like the day that brought us here, the day that brought us Trump. And it was, he went to a lot of Trump rallies and so forth and said, you know, I always saw hate there and rage and despair. And I always saw this sort of roiling racist anger there.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the one where Donald Trump almost accidentally stumbled into his vision of the Kingdom of Dawn.
Yeah, Kingdom of Dawn. Yeah.
You know, it's going to be great. You're going to have, it's going to be like heaven. All your jobs will come back, and it'll be white, and there'll be pianos, and it'll be like heaven for the best people, and it's going to be big and huge and beautiful and wonderful, and you can trust me, and it's going to be great, and we're all going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, and then I saw those people light up with hope.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and he said the magic words during his speech. He said, radical Islamic terrorism, which means there is no more terrorism, because as soon as you say those magic words, it goes away. And there were people in the audience with their MAGA hats on, cheering, make America great again. Swooned. Yeah, yeah.
But they were waiting for the other side of the apocalyptic story all that time, which is how this strong man personally, and nobody but him, can save us, restore our greatness.
Right, right.
This is straight up fascist rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
Every demagogue who's ever risen to power on the fears and hopelessness of his people.
Right.
Which, again, just stuns me, because nobody in America is going to the store with wheelbarrows full of money to buy bread.
Right. No, perception is everything. And that is true throughout history at all time. Like, that's just human nature. Like you said, you can't fight human nature. If your perception is that 50 years ago, everything was great and everyone had a job and everyone was in their right place and it really was, and the image you have is Leave It to Beaver.
Right.
You know, and that's where we want to go back to, because I'm white and I want to be middle class, and the ideal is my wife's at home with her pearls on, dusting, and I come home from my job as a band leader.
Yeah, whatever.
Which pays all the bills.
Yeah,
and,
for some reason. Pays all the bills.
Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't like that even then. You know, that's the point. But it is nostalgia for something that didn't exist. And I wanted to read this thing from, believe it or not, MTV.com. The article is called Fearing Fear Itself After the 2016 Election. This professor at Skidmore College named Sheldon Solomon has spent decades studying how knowledge of our eventual death affects humans. And, you know, this is one of my things now. I've been thinking for a while about writing a book about, and now I'm thinking it should just be a children's book. You know that book, Everybody Poops, with the animals? I'm going to make one that's just everybody dies. And it's just going to be, and here's an animal that's dead, and here's another animal that's dead, and here's a human that's dead, and we all die. And you just got to kind of cope with that, but actually make it more helpful to people than that. But how knowledge of the fact that we are mortal and we will die eventually, and the rural white baby boomers who are 60 and not getting Social Security and Medicare yet and not healthy anymore. You know, their knees hurt and their back hurts. And a lot of them are turning to opioids to just escape their problems, or alcohol. And the white death rate is creeping up in that age group and in that class because people have given up. And there's a, I mean, in Maine, the number one cause of death is smoking. You know, this is really, there's parts of the country that just have not reached the kind of consciousness of health that other parts of the country have.
No.
But he did a study last year that found that dwelling on mortality made people more likely to support Trump. A person who constantly tells us that crime and terrorism are happening somewhere out there, it's a hellhole, right? And ISIS, and it's so his popularity is, this is what Solomon says, his popularity is contingent on a perpetual state of existential anxiety.
Yes.
It feels like we're living in a Monty Python meets Ingmar Bergman film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely right. And on Twitter today, a lot of people were looking at photographs of the inaugural and posting them from their TV screens because no one went. And that's the point. You know, there are a sea of Make America Great Again hats and, you know, they're of white people. It's a sea of white people in the middle of the District of Columbia. And they all have their Make America Great Again hats, but it's sparse compared to even Clinton 93 and Bush 2005. And for, I mean, Obama was record breaking, right? Because not every, only every did sense, every Democrat that could go, go because it's historical, but the city of D.C. just spilled onto the subway system and went to the party because it was awesome.
Right.
And but here is this sparse crowd by comparison. And it wouldn't be that big a deal if Donald Trump didn't hitch his entire wagon to ratings and popularity and polls, right?
Exactly.
So, but on Twitter, the Make America Great Again hashtag types are making all kinds of excuses for why people aren't going. And it's, well, we're afraid to go. We're afraid to go because liberal protesters are going to hurt us we go. And we know for a fact that liberal protesters are there stopping people and hurting them. Right. And, you know, and there was so much pushback from that of, boy, you know, that means that the Secret Service is really a bunch of wimps and the D.C. police don't have their pet. Here's a somebody posted a photograph of the D.C. police paddy wagons waiting for to arrest anybody who's, you know, creating trouble, that they're ready, you know, and they would be ready. That's their job. But, again, someone comes back and says, no, you don't understand. Liberal protesters are scary. They just are. And no self-awareness of all of the armed Tea Party. We're going to water the tree of liberty with the blood of tyrants. We're going to, you know, we're going to have an armed insurrection against Obama if he doesn't leave office. And the fact that, you know, we don't talk about it, but the death threats.
Talk about it. We talk about it quite a bit.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying that it is. I agree. I'm not disagreeing. I'm saying that this is example. You know, the evidence table is about to collapse under the strain of the number of exhibits brought forward about the fact that these people have no fucking memory.
Right. Well, there's that. But I'm saying we don't talk about, and the Secret Service doesn't talk about, the death threats.
No.
That, you know, tripled and quadrupled because there's a black man in the White House.
Yes, they don't. And they shouldn't.
And they shouldn't. And so that, you know, this idea of it's scary. Well, you know, if you never left your town of your all white town of 300, the big city is, and your presidential candidate is telling you that the inner city is a hellhole full of crime and drugs. You're not going to come, right?
Well,
and the media doesn't want to interview anybody else but the disaffected white person these days. All of the Hillary voters who voted for her enthusiastically.
No, they don't exist.
Don't exist. They don't. And it's pathetic that we are, you know,
the invisible. All the Bernie voters. Yeah, all the Bernie voters who changed over to Hillary, who said right along, look, I like Bernie, but
that's our house.
That's our house. We're never going to get interviewed because that doesn't fit the narrative. The narrative is both parties are a train wreck.
Yep.
Everything's awful. Nobody voted for this unpopular person or this unpopular. No, that is absolutely not true. But again, that's not the narrative that sells. That's not the narrative that keeps, you know, the guy in front of his TV buying dick pills and wondering why his life sucks.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump's going to come save him. He's going to put coal back in the ground. He's going to cause jobs to blossom all around him. He's going to make it so this guy can see his dick for the first time in 20 years. He's going to cause women to flood in the door, even if he has to hire them from you know, Eastern European countries. He'll bring them over so this guy can get laid finally. That's who these people are. And there's a – I'm not sure where it is. There's a reporter from the Toronto Star.
Mm-hmm.
I'll find the link, who just went to the thing today. To the concert. You know, the concert to end all concerts. It had Toby Keith and Three Doors Down. you don't see that every day. And it had John Voight, who I said, I come to bury Lincoln, not to praise him. Hail Hydra!
No, Driftglass. Uh-huh. He did steal a line in his speech from Bane. There is a line. Somebody put them side by side on Twitter. We posted it at Crooks and Liars. Of, we're going to give it all back to the people.
You, the people.
The people. And the actual timing of the line is the same. It's really scary how it was. It is. It's Bane. It's Bane is this big guy who's going to come and take over. And it's, it, oh my gosh. It's,
well, and this guy from the Toronto Star just went around just photographing, interviewing people. Mm. And he was getting all kinds of shit all over Twitter. He says, I'm not judging these people. I'm telling you what they tell me. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's the Christian minister from Thus and So Town who says he's a godly man. He's going to bring God back into our lives.
Right, yep.
And I trust him because he never lies. I trust him because he always admits his mistakes. And you look at these sort of cow dumb Midwest working class morons who I'm sure are delightful people under other circumstances. But holy fuck, how do you live to be an adult in this country and be this completely fucking stupid and impenetrably stupid? They have formed really complex, interesting ideas on who Donald Trump is that have zero basis in fact. And the only way they do that is by stuffing their heads full of Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Breitbart every fucking day of their useless lives.
Mm-hmm.
And they're desperate for some change in their life, and I don't blame them for that. And so they project onto this lying, racist, lunatic shit that just isn't there. And it's not that it's subtly there or hidden there. They're projecting onto him traits that do not exist at all in the Republican firmament.
Yep, yep.
And then they get really pissed off when you start holding up, you know, flashcards that show what he actually said.
Yeah.
And it's all fake news.
And
really, once you've built that kind of moat around your soul, around your brain, once you've devoted your identity to defending a lie this big, you're never coming back.
Right, right.
Because as I've said a million times, it's not just that you'd have to admit you've got everything wrong in your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to admit that liberals got everything right.
Right,
and
right.
You really are the big cud-chewing chump that liberals say you are, because you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how to approach this subject in a way that isn't insulting. Because what do you say to someone who just keeps handing their vote and cash over to people who fuck them over?
Well, but Driftglass, and I agree with you, and I'm listening to you and nodding.
Yes.
I had to go to this place because I was looking for video and I needed it, but I went to Town Hall yesterday.
No!
I know.
No!
I know.
Well, you're permitted.
And I'm permitted to go anywhere on the internet that I want to go, but I didn't really want to go to Town Hall, but they might have had the video I needed and they didn't. So anyway, but there was an article in Town Hall headline that said, you know, the radical left is going to use the Trump inauguration to attack not Trump supporters, not patriots even.
Right.
Normal people.
That's
was what the, was the word they used.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Normal people are going to be attacked by the radical left.
You do it all the time.
And this article is, pardon me for saying this, Driftglass, using your tone and your rhetoric with no facts to back it up, right? That I read it twice because I really wanted, I said, wow, on the surface, this looks like a Driftglass rant, okay?
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah,
it's,
sure it does.
You replace conservatives with liberal, and it look on the surface it looks like a Driftglass rant. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, but if Driftglass wrote this, he would have a video of a conservative on television saying this thing, and he would have a video of a Republican congressman say, you know, Steve King saying, you know, calves the size of cantaloupes, and you know,
Here's the racist.
And nothing. Not a single link in the entire article. It was, you know, liberals want to get you because you're a normal American. And it's just without basis.
And here's,
I'm going to quote you. That's when I shrug my shoulders. whatever.
And this is, again, as we've slammed Chuck Todd for this, and rightly so, and people like him. they make it into a fight over font size.
Right, right.
Look, conservatives are simply fucking lying their asses off in 72-point font.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a bunch of liberals calling them out for lying in 72-point font.
See how
Isn't
both sides...
how both sides use the same font size. Isn't that just awful? Isn't it really the corrupt duopoly that's to blame here? But there is another difference.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, my tone, I'm much more eloquent, I think. I will never be allowed on cable television.
Yeah, yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Yep. Every one of these racist dog's breakfast from Hugh Hewitt to Michelle Malkin to Ben Dominic have been on Meet the Press or This Week. Or
if they can't, you know, even Pammy Atlas gets her a seat on Fox,
right.
You know, John Bolton gets to go on Fox
they
and have a segment.
The table.
So
yeah,
you even if you go into the top 15% of Looney Bin and Man on the Street insanity gets on Fox, you get to go on Fox and say that. And
we are held so far at arm's length.
Yep.
From. Even the most liberal television station.
Yeah, exactly.
That is
exactly.
It's hilarious because it's certainly kind of liberating. But there isn't, there's no way to fix this problem without fixing those people.
Yeah.
There just isn't. And the only way to do that is either by attacking them district by district, taking back politically and demographically. I mean, we're going to have to hunker down for 20 years until these people die off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Make sure that their poison doesn't leak too badly into the next generation.
And I think, too, you know, once a critical mass of them either passes away, and I don't wish that on anyone, or gets their Social Security and Medicare, and all of a sudden it's in their best interest to really look at who is threatening Medicare or not. And I'm not saying they will change their vote or change their attitude, but they might stay home.
Right.
And that is a win. But and I hate saying that because I love democracy. I want, and you and I have said this since before the time we met, and you and I have known each other face to face since when? 2007 we met at a meetup,
right.
I think?
That's
or
right.
Or 8? February 2008, I think we met face to face. Maybe I don't. Remember. I think that's right. You know, we've said even before that we miss having a debate with a conservative who wants government to work. You know, and who wants healthcare to work. And it's like, okay, but we need to cut costs. All right, we need to cut costs. Let's figure out how to do that. And maybe this idea will work. Okay, this idea didn't work. You know, Solyndra had a problem.
Right.
And so investing in these startups didn't work that one time. But overall, the program worked. And maybe we need to have a better screening for those kind of programs. But instead, it becomes, in this political climate, becomes a sledgehammer for Hannity to hit Obama over the head. And that's what it is. So I miss having somebody, and you and I have had great intoxicating conversations with smart conservatives at one time who were, well, you know, I just don't believe that government should be the first answer for everything. And then you start to discuss it. You know, what are private public partnerships like? How does that work? When does it work? When doesn't it work?
Right.
And
but there's no one left to have that conversation.
Exactly. And the sad thing is Barack Obama still believes that there is.
Right.
You know, and he really did for a long time believe that if he sat down with reasonable people and said, here's the goal, and you guys should have the goal of wanting to cover everybody in your district, too, and make sure they have health insurance. That's and a reasonable price. And we have to cut costs of what medicine costs us as a society. And let's work on that. He was not outlining anything as to how that happened. And it eventually adopted a Republican plan that made a lot of liberals mad.
Right.
So.
And from the day that happened, it was death panel, appeal. He's a monster. He wouldn't work with us. He's an evil, evil man.
Yeah. And now that he's gone, all of a sudden, really, I mean, literally within a week, conservatives out there started to look at what the bill really did.
Right.
And after, decided, you know, that it now polls better than Trump does.
After 7 years.
7 years.
They decided to do what they were bellowing about 7 years ago. Read the bill.
Read the bill.
They decided to read the bill.
Or at least figure out how it was going to impact everything. And the number of people, you and I have laughed over the Jimmy Kimmel video, and the people who didn't know that the Affordable Care Act, and that's part of that is just messaging, I agree, but part of it is there was a message, and the message was, it's Obamacare. That name came from conservatives, that name came from Michelle Bachmann screaming. Right. That this is government takeover of healthcare and death panels.
Death panels. Death panels, death panels.
And it's Obamacare, and so therefore it's awful. You know?
And Chuck Todd saying, it's not my job to sell, to message for the Democrats.
Right.
Well, you're right. But when someone comes on your show, which happens every single fucking week, mm-hmm. and they're always Republicans, and they drop their pants and take a giant dump in front of you.
You have to say, well, you know, it smells kind of like rose petals.
and you don't even point to it or look at it.
No.
You sort of pretend it's not there.
Yeah.
All that has done, this fake journalism, this fake objective above it all journalism, these people used to live on the fringe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dwight mm-hmm. Eisenhower identified these people back in a letter to his brother. I think I mentioned this last week. You know, in his letter to his brother, he said there are if any political party were ever to go after, I'm going to misquote this horribly now, any political party were ever to go after Medicare or Social Security, or Social Security and like retirement benefits and unemployment
benefits. That was Eisenhower. Yeah.
That party would be destroyed. You'd never hear from them again. There are a small group of people in Texas in the oil business, oil men and businessmen and others, but they're a small number and they are stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Republican Party, the Koch brothers, decided that they had to lower the collective IQ of the Republican Party to the point where they were all stupid enough to fall for this shit. And they did.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that is maddening is that they did it all in public.
Yep. Yep.
There's no secret endumbing ray in space that's making people stupider. It's all happening because of Fox News and right-wing talk radio and the normalization of right-wing radio and Fox News by the mainstream press, ignoring it, pretending it isn't there, pretending it isn't harmful, pretending it doesn't affect elections, and then when it finally overtakes them, pretending that both sides are equally to blame for it.
Yeah.
This has been a cancer growing in this country in the public square for 25 years. And the people who've been saying, this is really dangerous, this is really bad, this is really serious, this day is coming, are the only people who are not allowed anywhere near a microphone.
Right, right.
And that has to, I mean, I'm not saying I have the answer to it. I'm saying that if that doesn't change, we are screwed.
Yep. Yep.
And that's why we have this microphone.
That's why we have this microphone. We're the liberal media that you've been waiting for.
We really are. This is.
Although someone criticized us and said that we were the middle of the road Democrat media.
Well, you know, if you want to go read The Intercept, go ahead. It's fine. I mean, I'm glad that Glenn.
I'm glad The Intercept exists. Sure.
Glenn got a check for $250 million from his internet sugar daddy, and that's great. We have a couple of, you know, donated microphones and a laptop.
We do. We have donated microphones from a listener. That's right. That's
what
right.
We have.
Yep.
And that means we're unbossed and unbought, which means you do hear what we have to say. And on this
Drift Class is going to own that moral high ground, folks.
Goddamn right. I love the smell of morality in the morning. Smells like victory. I've never pretended to be anything but low and perverse and wrong some of the time.
And continually in a state of bitterness.
Well,
because 400 years of British oppression.
It's my Irish coming out. But once again, let me remind our listeners, we're probably freaking out today.
Mm-hmm.
There's more
or not. Maybe they've got lots of resolve and they're picking out their T-shirt to wear to the march tomorrow.
I hope so. I hope so. Because, you know, it's bad. It's bad. It's going to be bad. And that's all true. But it's also true that no group of people are more uniquely tempered by experience and tempered by memory and armed to the teeth with all the tools that are required to cope with this and to help our neighbors struggle through this than the dirty hippies are, than us liberals are.
Yep. And I will tell you, turned a lot of people around over the course of the past 6 years by indicating to them how sincerely I wanted them to have affordable health care.
Yeah.
And sent them links and sent them options and sent, you know, emailed or tweeted or whatever and said, look, have you tried this? Have you tried that? I understand when people are frustrated and they're you know, the website didn't work at first and it's for someone who's never done it before and doesn't realize that you really do have to have all your tax information in front of you when you apply for health insurance these days. And that's complicated and scary and involves math. And for a lot of people, that's just a barrier, you know. And I've said, you know, there are places and there have been places where you could go and get help and get assistance, one-on-one assistance, where they will sit down with you and figure out based on your pay stub what you make and what you pay for healthcare and how what a better deal would be.
Yeah.
And I've said, you know, it's obvious. I read that article 1 or 2 weeks ago about how the high deductible plans, clearly that's not working. Clearly that's not saving money for people. People are terrified to use that insurance. And that needs to be fixed because human nature says, you know, on paper, in the ideal world where everyone does exactly what they're supposed to do, you'd shop around for an MRI and
you'd put
$10,000 in a health savings account because you have all that money lying around, right?
Right.
And it's clear that these things just, they tried it. It doesn't work. Okay,
doesn't
so
work.
Let's try something else.
We've had a market test and it doesn't work. Yeah,
it doesn't work. And today, in addition to being Inauguration Day, is Medicare for All Day. And there's activism going on Twitter about that. So that is not going to be perfect, folks. You know, that to me and to my way of thinking, that's a huge step forward. It's going to throw a million people out of work in the insurance industry, and we're going to have to cope with that. And it will make the way medicine is delivered to people a different experience. And for some people, it won't be as easy or as quick or as convenient as it is now. And, you know, so that is something that people are going to have to cope with. I had a discussion with someone who said, This was when my middle child came over to me because I was typing kind of furiously. And then this person was actually typing back to me. And middle child said to me, "Oh, Mom, don't go on YouTube comments ever."
There's worse people in the world.
No, you don't understand. I know that, middle child. I know that. But this person's actually talking to me. And it was Obamacare. And it was, oh, no, it's got to be repealed. I can't afford it.
Right.
I can't afford to... I'm paying, you know, almost as much as my mortgage for my healthcare premium.
Yeah.
And people on YouTube comments are calling me selfish.
Right.
And I said, well, the reason they're calling you selfish is you don't like the bill you're getting. And so the answer is to throw 20 million people off of insurance.
Right. Right.
And that's why they're saying that. And I didn't say they're right. You're a terrible person. I just pointed out that, you know, in the middle of your problem, which is a real problem, and you have a problem that should be solved, it should be fixed. The way people are perceiving you is bulldoze everyone else's care because I'm having a problem.
Right.
And when you kind of wake up to that, maybe we can fix your problem.
The way to solve your problem is to join me to kick the shit out of that guy.
Right. Or everybody.
It isn't. Now, repealing Obamacare won't lower your premium.
Well, it'll double your premiums is what they're finding out. CBO, I mean, Newt Gingrich wants to now get rid of the Congressional Budget Office.
Right, 'cause they keep using math.
I said, yeah. Did they use math on the amount of oral sex you got while you were married to somebody else, Newt?
How'd you go? This is such a nice podcast with highbrow and shit. And then along comes...
Well, I'm sorry, but, you know, I hate to bring this up, but Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton come from that same Southern school where, If you don't put this in there, it's not cheating.
It ain't cheating if you don't do that thing that you're not supposed to do. They talk about it in church.
Yeah.
I did not know her in a biblical sense.
Yeah.
All right.
All righty then, you know.
Yeah, I'm, you know. And no, you're not sorry. You can say you're sorry to do that, but you're not.
He knows me very, very well.
So,
and I do mean that in the biblical sense. The
biblical and non-biblical sense. In every sense. To cap this off, we're not saying this is going to be better than 2004. It isn't. It's going to be tougher.
Yeah.
But we are saying, at least for me, this is one of those, I curse the lesson, but I bless the knowledge.
Ah.
You know?
Yes.
It was horrible. It was going through the Bush years was horrible for if you were a liberal. Because you had the same dumbfounded look on your face that, holy shit, how could people be this stupid?
Yeah.
And then it all fell apart. And watching what conservatives did when their lies went up in flames is incredibly educational.
It's instructive. Absolutely. One. Absolutely. But and what? Don't let them do it again. Exactly.
And they're little wind-up toys when it comes to these sorts of things. They will always do the same thing over again.
Mm-hmm.
So the next time, you know, when the shit hits the fan this time, they will always do the same thing. So we need, as a group of liberals, to find the spot in the loop where we can jam in a crowbar and break their machine.
Right.
Don't
right.
allow them, you know, deny them an exit visa, deny them a way out of I didn't vote for Trump. It wasn't me. It was liberals. There is a way to do that. But you have to find the spot in the mechanism that's weak and disrupt it, truly disrupt it. And I believe, and I've said this a million times, the spot in the mechanism that's weak is the alibi, which is both sides do it.
Right.
The spot is centrism. The guys in the center, the Chuck Todds, the David Brookses, the Matthew Dowds, they're the weak point.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not move the ball forward but an inch or two, but discrediting the center
absolutely
goes
absolutely.
A long way to saying, look, no, there's two sides here. You can pick one or the other, and you
right.
look at your consequences, and they're both imperfect, but there are two fucking sides here.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys in the middle all work for the guys on the right.
Exactly. And excuse the liars, because the ones that are lying, when you say both sides, are the ones that are getting away with something.
Exactly.
Yep, every single time. Drift Class, we have to stop. There's a blog by Ian Welsh, wrote a blog post a few days ago called What Can You Do in Troubled Times? And the last line of this post is, we are doomed and honored to live in such times.
Yes.
So it's going to be hard, but we are doomed and honored.
And let me remind everybody what Bill Clinton always said and what Barack Obama always said.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not being, you know, I'm not idolizing.
You're not sugarcoating. Right.
It's when they faced very difficult times, it was always remember who elected you.
Mm-hmm.
You're here to serve them.
Right.
Your problems are irrelevant.
Right.
So my question to our listeners is, who can you serve? Who can you help?
Yep.
Who can you help pull out of a hole? Whose life can you help lighten just a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Find some of those people and help them, and you will feel a million times better. And your community will be a little bit brighter, and you'll probably earn some friends and allies along the way.
There were two points in our marriage this past week, this past 7 days. At one point when I was incredibly proud of you, and at one point when you were incredibly proud of me, we got a phone call from Junior Dude. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but very early in the morning, he was at a sleepover.
Oh, yes.
And he called us, and the phone rang at 5 in the morning.
Oh, 1:30.
Oh, was it?
Two in the morning.
It was middle of the night. I was kind of in and out.
No good calls ever come in the middle of the
night. No, but it was bad. Huh? And he was at a sleepover, and you and I, but he wanted to come home. And you hung up the phone and put your shoes on. You were going to go get him. And you and I both said, you know, probably somebody came home drunk and he doesn't want to be there.
Uh-huh.
And I texted him and said, does your friend who you're staying with want to come over to our house? And all Junior Dude texted back to me in all caps was, maybe, I love you so much.
Yeah.
And you went over there and you didn't get involved with whatever it was, but there were two boys waiting for you on the driveway with their bag of clothes. Uh-huh. And he came home and explained that pretty much what we thought had happened. And You said to me, we are that house. Yeah. We are
it's
the
like
house.
Offices of Thunderdome. It's one boy enters, two boys leave. So, and we are that house. You know,
we are that house. We are the house where, and I think for Junior Dude, it was particularly frightening because he's never lived in a house like that. And, to explain to him that, it's chaotic and you can't rely on adults. Right. And to explain to him that, no, that's actually pretty common. And it's not a reflection on your friend or his mom or anybody. It just happens. And it's something where it is important to be alert and to take the steps you need to take for you and your friend to be safe.
Right.
And you did the right thing. And I think the most calming thing for him was hearing that you did the right thing. You did the right thing to call home and get somebody to just come get you and leave it at that.
So all y'all out there, be that house.
Yeah, be that house. And then last night, I'm sitting there helping Junior Dude with he's studying for the AP government exam. And we were having a lot of fun going over those questions. Phone rings. And it is a lady from church. And she is the lady who... is a ball of fire in terms of fundraising for the American Cancer Society. And she helps people who are undergoing cancer treatment to get the right kind of wig. She is a specialist in that, in providing makeup and wigs and all kind. There's a program the American Cancer Society does to help women, particularly who are going through chemo, to look better and feel better about themselves. And she's very helpful with that. And one thing she does is she sort of channels all of the prayer shawls that I knit for people that are going through chemo and they get cold and they need something to wrap up in that's soft and so forth. And that's part of my ministry that I do is knit those things. And she needed one. She needed a shawl knit up and she needs it by March. And I said, of course, you can count on me. Not that I don't have anything else to do in the next 2 months, but yeah, you can count on me. And it's for someone in Wisconsin that she doesn't know, but one of the women who's going through chemo here has a friend in Wisconsin who's going through chemo, and friend number one already has a shawl from me and loves it and wants her friend in Wisconsin to have one just like it.
If this shows up on eBay, I'll be very upset.
No, it won't. It won't, you know. But, you know, can I have another shawl like this? Because it comforted me so much through my chemo, and I'm not going to let go of mine, but I know my friend in Wisconsin could really use it, you know. And so they call a friend, they call a friend, they call me, and I say, you can count on me. I'll do it.
You can count on me.
And I hung up the phone, and you went, you should just change your name to that. So we smiled at each other. It feels good to help. It feels good, you know.
It eases your burden and it helps someone else.
And I want to send everybody to Donors Choose also. Go look up autism classrooms and see the amazing things that teachers are doing with kids who, to the outside world, would seem to be impossible to communicate with, to manage in a classroom. And these teachers are just amazing. And what they need are $4 chew necklaces so that their, you know, the out of control kid in their classroom can sit down and chew on a piece of rubberized plastic that's hard and designed for this. And that calms this middle school student so that they can learn in the classroom, you know, and it's a necklace that looks like a Lego block or a shark. Yeah, a Lego block. They have Lego blocks. They have dog tags that have Captain America's star and circle on them. And they have shark tooth, you know, like the shark tooth surfer necklace, which is just so cool, you know. And you could wear that to the mall and it wouldn't look like you were wearing a pacifier, which is essentially what it is. It's a middle school pacifier. But, you know, and I think they're like $4 each, you know, for these necklaces that they order. And you go and you donate a cup of coffee and you've added to the pile that's going to go to help a classroom of six, which for one teacher, a classroom of six kids like that is more than she can handle, absolutely, more than one person can handle. Yep. So, you know, I'm going to add one more thing. I'm sorry. We're blabbing on. That is what made me so furious about the Secretary of Education hearing.
Yeah.
Where you're talking about IDEA and you're talking about with Betsy DeVos, who's a billionaire,
right,
you know, who is going to be Secretary of Education because she bought the office, mm-hmm, and she doesn't know about special education because charter schools don't have to take special ed students. Their test scores are off the charts and they are succeeding in education because they've cherry picked the best students with the best homes and the best incomes to come to their schools, and they've cherry picked them off the top, and therefore they have the best test scores and they're better than other schools because they don't have any special ed kids. Mm-hmm. And so thank God for a questioner in the U.S. Congress who has a special ed kid. And the thing is, she questioned Betsy DeVos like any other special ed parent would question her.
Exactly.
We are all experts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we've had to be.
Yep.
So I'm listening to her questions and I'm like, wow, IDEA, least restrictive environment, you know, these kind of materials, special ed materials, access, you know, accommodations, you know, uh-huh, and I could have sat there and Al Franken could have questioned me about the importance of these things. And I could have said, yeah, you know. We have a big long, and it turns into a conversation instead of an interrogation.
Exactly. And you know, see, that's the thing. This is, again, bringing it full circle. There is a great and important and profound conversation to be had with people who differ about the means but not the ends.
Right, right.
And right, it's perfectly legitimate to have a conversation about what is the best possible environment for special ed students.
Mm-hmm.
But it is illegitimate, absolutely illegitimate to put a billionaire, know-nothing creep,
right,
who bought her way to the office in front of a congressional hearing, not ask her any important questions if you're a Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And the question for her is, how dare you be here?
Yeah,
how
right.
How dare you not know the answer to these questions?
How dare you think that giving $800,000 to each of the Republican senators on this panel means you're entitled to a job?
You're qualified to a job.
In which you will then put at risk vulnerable children.
Yep.
Yeah. Fuck you. That's when I would be losing all decorum. But Al Franken didn't lose his decorum, but he did tell a lie. From his his desk, he said, "I'm surprised you don't know that." And I went, "Oh, Al, you're not surprised."
But you know, that's the conversation happening at the national level, and that's important and scary, and it's depressing as shit. But there's a different conversation happening at the donors choose level.
Exactly.
They need $4. They need $8. They need to get these teachers, dedicated teachers, who are going to be there, come hell or high water, need basic supplies for kids who desperately need it. And
the beauty of Donors Choose, you know, they don't pay me to say this.
No.
I'm just passing it along.
Right.
You can look up by zip code, so you can do local schools. You can look up by autism, if that's your thing. You can look up by cerebral palsy. You can look up by art supplies.
Right.
We have in the past looked up science fiction and found people that are looking for science fiction books for their high school classroom. You know, they're going to all read Ready Player One.
Yeah.
You know, oh, awesome. You know, I'm trying to buy 20 copies of Ready Player One for my class. That's great.
Yeah.
You know, and you can contribute $5 and 30 other people can contribute $5 and then he's got his books and he can teach a unit. And
let's face it, we've helped corrupt the youth, and that's the important thing.
That's the important thing. We've corrupted the youth.
Uh-huh.
So, but whatever you want, whatever your thing is, you know, like I said, a lot of people would only want to help schools in their district.
Sure.
Well, you can do that. Totally do that.
That's fine.
Or you only want to help schools that have high poverty. That's another thing. You can look up by poverty level of schools and say, I really want to help the most needy ones. Or you can also look up the projects where they only need a few bucks and you'll be the hero that puts them over the top.
Exactly.
And that's a wonderful thing to do, too. Go look for people that need $100 or less and say, oh, wow, if I stretch and give $25 to this teacher, her project's done and she gets her stuff. That next week, her stuff comes in the mail. So, you know, it's just a wonderful thing. So, all right, I think we've done our good deeds for the day, Chris. <Okay. laughs>
It's a tough day, but we're really glad you're out there. We know
we hear us
and hear back from you. We know that we're having a conversation, and we value you so much. We value.
And I was grateful that we were podcasting today. For my mental health, it made me feel good to know, okay, we're going to talk to our peeps today, so it's going to be okay. And I'm not going to spend the day crying because, no, we're going to talk to our peeps today. I'll be okay. So that's what you mean to us, and thank you for being there. Again, thanks for, as you put in our notes, Drift Class, many thanks to all you goofs who dropped us a little dinero to help pay off our new furnace.
Yes.
We were not expecting that.
We were showing up like, okay, that's pretty cool. I didn't know a furnace could run on scotch, but okay, we'll give it a try.
No, we were not expecting to need a new furnace, is what I'm saying. That came as a total shock. So, you know, and it never is a good time when you need a new furnace, but we have one now, and it will be paid off at some point, and you guys have cushioned the blow of that.
Really have.
Not minor expense. So thank you for doing that. All right. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. We have two internet kitties, and they are brothers, Sammy and Gordon. And they sent multiple pictures of Sammy and Gordon. I think I'm going to put at least two up because Gordon, in one of the pictures, looks like he just watched Trump's inaugural address. He's just like, oh, my God. Sammy and Gordon are gorgeous. They're 2 years old. They're into everything. They live down in warm and sunny climes and clearly are beloved by their humans and just a delightful, beautiful pair of cats. So go and visit them at our Facebook page or our website. And you can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, or you can write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions. Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, but we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter, and thank you for doing that. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
You know, Blue Gal, today the Internet Kitties would just like to kick back and soothe their jangled nerves with a little music.
La, 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 la.
Oh, God.
Do you know it?
It's going to be in my head the rest of that damn day. I love you, baby.
One banana, two banana, three banana, four. Four bananas make a bunch, and so do many more.
Good God, she knows the whole song.
Over hill and highway, the banana bunches go. Buggies go. Coming here to bring you the Banana Splits show. Sha-la-la, la-la-la-la.
Now, see, now you got me doing.
I love you, Driftglass.
I love you too, baby.
See you next week, everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, lovey-dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast. Recorded under Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.